The winner is.
The winner is.
Well, somebody can send your luggage.
Sometimes. That means sometimes.
There can be 100 people in a room. Maybe there is right now.
I know it's tuna, but it says chicken.
I don't know her.
She always has these long lists of like diva demands.
Cheetos and Doritos.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
I understand you embrace the term diva.
Yes. Hello, divas and divos. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Diva Dailies. This is a podcast where we deconstruct divas on film and TV. I am your host, Steffi. And before we get into it with our guest, if you guys aren't already following the podcast, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Diva Dailies Pod. You can also email us, divadailiespod@gmail.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can call us. We're 714-729-3121. And if you wouldn't mind giving us a nice rating and review on iTunes, that'd be great. And, you know, while you're there, why don't you subscribe and recommend us to a friend who you think will really enjoy the show? So this week, I am joined once again to wrap up rom-com divas that we've been covering for the past 2 months. I am joined by Jess.
Hello again, everybody.
Yes, Jess is back to help me wrap up Rom-Com Divas Month with a very meta rom-com movie. Jess, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Steffi?
I'm good. I'm very excited to talk about this movie because I think there's some interesting things we can talk about for sure.
Oh goodness, me too. I love this movie so much.
Nice. All right. Well, I mean, let's just jump into our Oscar and Razzie moment of the week then. This is a segment where we talk about our personal high point and low point moments of the week. Jess, guess first. What's your Oscar and Razzie moment?
My Oscar moment of the week, Stefan, who has been on the show multiple times, finally came back down from staying with his parents for a while during all this COVID madness. And now my movie buddy is back in the house.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So I have been very excited. We watched this movie together the other night. Both got good laughs out of it. Good thing. And my Razzie moment of the week, as I mentioned before, I am a mother of one, and my almost 8-year-old son the other night would not fall asleep.
Oh.
Yeah, for no reason. Wasn't sick, wasn't anything. And we normally give him melatonin to help him sleep because he usually has kind of a hard time anyway. But he just would not sleep and kept us up until like 5:30 in the morning.
Mm.
He would not go to sleep, and it was not a good time.
Oh my gosh. So like, what time did he eventually end up going back to sleep or going to sleep?
I kind of just left it to him. After 5 a.m., me and my partner needed sleep. We love our son. We make sure we're accessible to him and everything, so he knows that he could come in and talk to us at any time. But at 5 o'clock, he was laying down. He was trying to sleep. So, you know, fingers crossed, he got some sleep. He was up at his normal 7:30 a.m., so he did not get much sleep that night. But the next night, he was out like a light.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah.
Well, were you able to get some sleep?
I did get a little sleep. It did throw my sleep schedule off, but I am much better now.
Okay, that's good to hear. Well, hopefully, fingers crossed, tonight it will run smoothly.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Now, Steffi, before we get started, you asked me a question last time that really caught me off guard.
Oh, is it your favorite divas?
It was. Oh my goodness. And I could only think of the fabulous Queen Latifah because, of course, she's amazing.
Yeah.
But I had some time to think on it. And I have to mention, I don't care how much people hate her, I love Anne Hathaway. I think she is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I am a team Anne Hathaway girl, too. So.
Oh, good.
I know a lot of people rag on Anne, especially during the Les Mis era of her career, because people were like, oh, she is so, people would say, like a stereotypical theater kid and kind of wears her ambition on her sleeve. But you know what? It's okay. to show that you want something and to achieve those things. So
absolutely. And didn't she get an Oscar for that?
Yeah. She won, I think that was Best Supporting Actress.
Well, damn right.
Yeah, that was the year of she beat... She beat Sally Field. That was the year of Lincoln. So Daniel Day-Lewis won. Mm-hmm. And then I'm pretty sure that was also the same year Jennifer Lawrence won for Best Actress.
Okay.
But yeah. I love Anne. Princess Diaries is one of my favorite movies.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And The Devil Wears Prada. Oh my word.
Oh yes, of course.
She's great in pretty much anything she does. Side notes, I was going to mention, not as much as I love Anne Hathaway, but I do really love Nicole Kidman and Kristen Wiig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love them, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah, see? Okay, have you watched Big Little Lies?
I have. I watched the first season. I haven't gotten into the second season.
Okay, same. I've only seen the first episode of season two, but I mean, we love Celeste. She was very good in Big Little Lies.
Yes, and oh my word, her and Alexander Skarsgård were so good together.
Yes.
Oh my word.
She was so good. It's so interesting because I felt like that first season of Big Little Lies, like the first half, people were like, oh my gosh, Reese Witherspoon is so good. And like Reese was really, really good. But then like as the season went on, it really evolved into a beautiful, well, it's like a heartbreaking, but it's just like a great performance from Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh. Yes. Well, I mean, I guess I'll jump into my Oscar and Razzie moment of the week then. So my Oscar moment is a bit of a preemptive Oscar moment in that after we are done recording, I'm going to go order and eat Mediterranean food.
Ooh.
And I'm very excited.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
People are going to be like, wait, Steffi's like really rushing this episode along. I won't be. Yes, I'm very excited to eat Mediterranean food. I was watching some travel vlogs last night of people in Egypt because I really, really want to go to Egypt one day, and they were eating lots of Mediterranean food in that video. So now I'm gonna go eat Mediterranean food. I'm just gonna order it and then take it home.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for that. And then my Razzie moment of the week is not really original. It's pretty much what it was the last time I talked to you, Jess, and that we're still stuck inside.
Yeah,
pandemic's still occurring. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Yeah, and still social distancing, and just got notice in, you know, this last week in July that we might be doing distance learning again at the beginning of the school year, and it was not the most fun at the end of last year, so really hoping for something better come out of it.
Oh gosh, it feels like we're gonna just be inside all of 2020.
Yeah.
And now, our feature presentation.
Natalie's saying that romantic comedies are bad.
All those movies are lies, they're terrible pop songs.
I think people would have an easier time seeing you if you were a little more open.
All right, so the movie that we're talking about today is Isn't It Romantic?
I think I might be going crazy.
I hit my head really hard and I woke up in this alternate universe.
And now I have a gay sidekick who's setting gay rights back like 100 years.
I love working the legs.
Jesus!
And guys look me in the eyes.
You're quite beguiling, aren't you?
Are you feeling what I'm feeling?
No!
Oh my God.
I think I'm trapped in a...
My life's become a mother... romantic comedy!
This movie was released theatrically on February 13th, 2019 in the United States. Pretty much a Valentine's Day release.
Yes.
And then it was released internationally on Netflix on February 28th, 2019. This movie is a bit of a meta movie. It's a kind of a commentary on rom-coms, a bit of a satire. It's basically about a young woman who is disenchanted with love and rom-coms. She finds herself mysteriously trapped inside of a romantic comedy after she gets mugged in the subway station.
A PG-13 romantic comedy, no less.
Yes, very important distinction there.
Oh yeah.
This movie stars our diva of the week, Rebel Wilson. It also stars Adam Devine, Liam Hemsworth, Priyanka Chopra Jonas. I'll never get used to saying that. That's so weird.
Yes.
Betty Gilpin, Brandon Scott Jones and Jennifer Saunders. The movie was directed by Todd Strauss-Shawson, who, interestingly, you know, back when I had a permanent co-host, her name was Lisa, we had planned for our last movie in October to kind of function the way that this movie is for Rom-Com Divas Month. We had originally planned on covering The Final Girls, because that movie is kind of like a meta look at the horror genre and the Final Girls trope that's used in that genre. And while I was watching this movie, I was like, this is kind of like what The Final Girls is doing, except Isn't It Romantic is doing that with rom-coms. And I checked, and both movies were directed by Todd Strauss-Shawson. So I was like, oh my goodness, this
makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense. It's all coming together. This movie was written by Aaron Cardillo, Dana Fox, and Katie Silberman. I saw on IMDb, supposedly, allegedly, Aaron Cardillo and Dana Fox are involved in writing a My Best Friend's Wedding reboot, which I was like, whoa. And then Katie Silberman previously wrote Set It Up, kind of like a modern day rom-com that was on Netflix. It was very popular. I think it was like last year or 2 years ago.
Don't think I caught that one.
Oh, you've never seen Set It Up?
No.
Oh, it's on Netflix.
Oh, I should check it out.
Yeah. Pretty good. Well, Jess, I open the floor to you now. When was the first time you saw Isn't It Romantic?
Pretty sure the first time I saw this movie was earlier this year before COVID started, or at the very beginning of COVID. It was on Hulu. The first time I saw an ad for this movie back in 2019, I was like, oh man, I want to see that. That looks great. That looks hilarious. And then it just kind of got overrun with other movies that I wanted to see. But I was not expecting it to be this hilarious. Stefan actually lives down the hallway from me in our house, and he said it is the only movie that he has heard me laugh that hard at so far.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So it's really fantastic. I really love it. I really love the premise of it. I love the whole thing, pretty much.
Nice. Well, I guess then for me, the first time I saw this movie was 2 nights ago.
Oh.
Basically, while I was watching this movie, because again, it's a very, if you guys have never seen Isn't It Romantic, it's like kind of a satire. It uses a lot of tropes that you would see in rom-coms. So while I was watching this movie, I was like, oh my God, it's like watching where my head has been for like the past couple of weeks because of the podcast we've been talking about from a week-to-week basis, talking about rom-coms. But, you know, obviously in between all of that, I record a lot of these episodes in a very short period of time. Like, I usually do 2 episodes a week.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I'm like watching these movies like very close together, and then I'm like reading all of these articles, and I'm listening to the interviews, and then I'm editing the podcast. So I'm hearing people talk about rom-coms like all the time. So it's just like, oh my God, this is like my head brought to life.
That is wild.
Yeah, it was a very intense experience.
I read on IMDb that the director, Todd Strauss-Shawson, watched over 90 romantic comedies in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And noted the similar visual and narrative tropes, and among them including like New York City, Starbucks coffee, rain falling when couples kiss, half moon windows, bubble baths. So just silly things like that that kind of seem to make up a rom-com.
Yeah, I read that little factoid on IMDb too, and I was like, man, Todd, I don't know how you did 90 rom-coms within a 2 week period, but like in a very small way, I kind of understand, like, whoa, what a world to immerse yourself in. But before, you know, watching the movie though, I remember hearing about this movie when it was about to come out, but then once it came out, I kind of remember hearing like whispers of like, oh, that movie, it didn't do so well, or some people were saying like, it's not that good. So I kind of had a bit of a negative connotation, not that there was anything like too controversial with it, but I was just like, oh, I just heard that movie wasn't very good. So I ended up not really watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I ended up watching it 2 nights ago, I was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed the movie. Again, maybe that's because my expectations were so low, but I actually enjoyed the movie. I definitely think, I mean, we'll get into this a little bit later, but I feel like they could have done more, maybe, you know, been a little bit more clever, but I, for the most part, I was like, okay, this was a light, enjoyable movie.
Yes.
Again, largely I feel like it's because it was framed in my head that this is going to be horrible. So I was expecting the worst, but pleasantly surprised.
Yes. I think they really just wanted to hit on the major tropes and then fill the rest in with comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So just to really throw it in your face that this is a ridiculous version of a rom-com.
My first scene that I want to talk about is when she's watching Pretty Woman as a child, which is literally how this movie opens.
Don't you know?
Vivian, I'm going to be in town until Sunday. I'd like you to spend the week with me.
Holy shit!
Set up, beginning of the movie, like I said, you see young Natalie, and she's going to grow up to be Rebel Wilson's character. She's watching Pretty Woman, and she's super into it. She's smiling at the TV, and then her mom walks in and pretty much kills any semblance of joy she felt about rom-coms.
I'll be gone most of the day.
Wake up, Natalie. Just a movie. Forget about men. Forget about love. In real life, girls like us don't get that.
Why?
Well, look in the mirror, doll. We're no Julia Roberts.
We're not?
That woman has got a $1 million smile. She's got a gorgeous mane of hair. Okay, she might not have to bleach her moustache, but she hasn't even got room for a moustache. She's got a tiny little space here. They'll never make a movie about girls like us, and you know why?
What?
Because it would be so sad. They'd have to sprinkle Prozac on the popcorn or people would kill themselves. You see, Natalie, life's not a fairy tale. There's no happy endings.
There is always going to be a happy ending.
No, darling. Someone might marry you for a visa. That's about it.
So my thoughts on this are, first of all, I really enjoy the symmetry just for this podcast specifically, because we literally started Rom-Com Divas by covering Pretty Woman. I had no idea this movie started off literally referencing Pretty Woman. So it's just like, oh my God, the symmetry. And then yes. I just like, I really felt so bad for this kid. It made me so sad to see this mom literally ruin this movie and rom-coms in general for this kid, because I couldn't help but think, again, was not planned, but when I talked about Pretty Woman, I shared this story about how the first time I watched Pretty Woman was with my mom too.
Yes.
Spark Notes version. It just so happened to be on the TV at a hotel, and my mom was like, oh, Pretty Woman's on. I love this movie, and Julia Roberts is my favorite actress, and we watched it together for the first time. And mm-hmm. I've always held such a special place in my heart for Pretty Woman and Julia Roberts, because I saw how happy that movie made my mom. So watching, you know, a different mother-daughter pair in this movie, except it's like a very different experience.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, that's so sad. This mom really reframed Pretty Woman, Julia Roberts, and rom-coms in such a negative light. And I would make the argument that it was her mom's positioning of rom-coms that was toxic, not rom-coms themselves. And on the one hand, you know, I understand that maybe the mom was trying to save her daughter from quote-unquote getting her hopes up about love and trying to sort of like warn her to not base her expectations on what romance and love is on movies.
Yeah.
But it's also important to note too that, you know, the mom has a line in there that kind of alludes to, you know, maybe the guy she was involved with at the time, or maybe the girl's father just was using her for a green card or something. But, you know, basically it seemed like the mom was bitter in her own love department life. And because of that, she sort of like planted this seed in her daughter's head that she was not lovable and not worthy of the romance that she saw in these rom-coms. And I was just like, dang, what a downer. Oh, made me sad.
Yeah, I do have to say, though, one of my favorite lines in the movie happens during this scene.
Okay.
By Jennifer Saunders of Absolutely Fabulous fame. She said,
they'll never make a movie about girls like us, and you know why?
What?
Because it would be so sad. They'd have to sprinkle Prozac on the popcorn or people would kill themselves.
Yes, there are some great lines in this scene.
Not to downplay suicide or anything like that. It is a very serious issue. I just think the line was funny.
Yeah, she delivered some funny lines here. What did you think about the opening, though?
I thought it was great. I thought it was a perfect setup. Mm-hmm. Actually, the girl is 12 years old.
Wow.
And then they go 25 years in the future, which was Rebel Wilson's actual age when she shot this.
Ah, nice. I like that tie-in.
So I thought that was a really interesting tidbit.
I like that they let Rebel play her actual age.
Yeah.
Then the second scene that I have to talk about is when Natalie talks about all the reasons why she hates rom-coms. So it's like now present day, and she works at an architect firm, and she's an architect herself, and she has an assistant. Her name is Whitney. And Whitney likes watching rom-coms at work, and she's watching The Wedding Singer. And
yeah.
I've noticed from covering different rom-coms over the past weeks, 9 out of 10 times at some point in the movie, they are watching a rom-com within the rom-com movie. So it's like, oh, look at that.
Wow, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, most of the movies that, at least that we've covered here on the podcast, they're at some point watching a rom-com. So I'm like, oh my God.
Okay.
We love meta moments there. But so in this scene, Whitney is watching The Wedding Singer, and then Natalie basically tells her, can you stop watching The Wedding Singer and actually like get to work? And then this is when Natalie starts on her big tirade as to the many reasons why she does not see it for rom-coms.
Whitney, all those movies are lies set to terrible pop songs.
I love those songs. And those movies are not lies.
Yes, they are. People waking up in bed with full hair and makeup. It's so unrealistic. Every time someone puts on a pair of pants, it turns into a whole montage.
Yeah, because trying on clothes is fun.
For you. Okay, what about how there's always like some main chick and she's super clumsy. She's always like, oh, whoops. And everyone goes, she's so charming. No, in real life, people think she had muscular dystrophy.
Your flaws are what make you beautiful.
Your flaws are what make you ugly. That's why they're called flaws. And then, like, in those movies, when there are two women in the same workplace, they have to be, like, mortal enemies. But look at us. Like, I love you. I think you're the best. The idea that two women can't root for each other at work is just disgusting. And apparently there's no HR at any of those businesses in rom-com world because there's no diversity and people are always boning their co-workers. Oh, and don't even get me started about the cliche gay best friend whose sole purpose in the story is just to help the main hot chick. And like, does he have a job? Like, what's going on in his life? Who cares? It's so insulting, don't you think? And then they always have some stupid voiceover that comes on to tell you what you're supposed to think. You know what I think? Act better.
For someone who hates romantic comedies, you have certainly thought about this a lot.
Basically, the reason why I chose this scene is because I feel like this conversation between Natalie and Whitney is basically how I feel the discourse on rom-coms is like now, especially on the internet.
Yes, oh my word.
Yeah, you hear and read about all the ways that rom-coms are not realistic and how they're toxic and even problematic. And, you know, there's definitely valid criticisms of the genre.
Oh, yeah.
But despite all of that, for me personally, I'm not going to lie, I still really enjoy rom-coms, especially in light, again, of watching so many rom-coms recently. And maybe it's also a combination as well that because of all the bad negative news that we hear about every day, I'm just like, oh, this is nice to be in rom-com world. So for me, I still really enjoy rom-com. So I want to ask you, Jess, what is your relationship to rom-coms?
They are not very high on my watch list.
Okay.
If I'm going to watch a rom-com, it has to have a good reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just toss on any rom-com because I often find most of them pedantic and ridiculous.
Okay.
But I really enjoy watching older movies, older kind of rom-coms.
Mm.
Like a classic is Singing in the Rain.
Right, yes.
Super love that movie. And I'm not certain if you've talked about Audrey Hepburn.
We did, actually. That was our second week. We talked about Roman Holiday.
Okay. And I know everybody thinks of her in Breakfast at Tiffany's, but actually I used to watch Gilmore Girls every day with my mom.
Oh, wow.
After school.
Okay.
And it was really great. It was one of the fond memories I have. But there's one point where Lorelai goes out on a date with, I want to say it's Luke, one of her beaus of the moment, and he sets up a movie to show on this barn side, and it's amazing, and it's like a little drive-in for them, and I had to do research to find out what this movie was, and I watched it, and I loved it, and it's called Funny Face.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
I have not, but I've heard the references before, but I've personally not seen it.
It's a really great all-around movie, and I really love it.
So would you say that you're more of like a Natalie then versus a Whitney?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not the type to go in and be like, oh, it's the best, and are they going to wind up together? Da-da-da. Of course they're going to wind up together. I often don't try to think when I'm watching movies because my brain will ruin them for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just most with any genre of movie, I can often point out what's going to happen because I am a cinephile, and so it's not for easy watching.
Mm. Yeah, it was interesting when they were pointing out tropes as they went along. There were some when I was like, again, maybe it's also because I feel like I've seen a fair amount of rom-coms, but I haven't seen like 90 rom-coms like the director here. But I think, you know, there's also rom-coms where they didn't end up together. The episode actually that's coming out right before this one is My Best Friend's Wedding. And in that one, that was kind of a little bit of subverting the genre in that way because, spoiler alert, well, you guys would know that if you've listened to the previous episode, but Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney, they don't end up together. And I remember in that episode, we were talking about how that was kind of like an interesting trajectory for the rom-com to, especially thinking about how Julia Roberts is in both because you have her beginning the decade with Pretty Woman and she ends up with the guy. And then towards the end, she doesn't end up with the guy. But, you know, there's also other movies, too, like Roman Holiday.
Yes.
They don't end up together. So.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just like that.
Yeah. What's your first scene then?
My first scene was where she discovers her new apartment.
Okay.
She first walks in and she's like, oh, sorry, wrong apartment. Sorry, sorry. And like closes the door and then walks in and like looks around and like, her apartment is huge and all this gorgeous furniture, and she calls 911. She doesn't know what else to do.
911, what's your emergency?
Yeah, I've been robbed, sort of.
Someone's broken into my apartment
and stretched it.
And they've taken everything
and replaced it all with much nicer stuff.
Okay, ma'am.
This doesn't sound like an emergency. This sounds like you got it together.
This is every pair of shoes ever made. I don't normally wear heels because of the uneven weight distribution, but these are incredible. And they're all in my size.
So let me get this straight. Your emergency is that your apartment is too big. You have every shoe you could ever want, and they all fit your cute feet.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I
am.
So that's probably the first part that made me laugh really hard.
Yes, it was maybe they were specifically referencing 13 going on 30 there.
Yes. Oh, my word. That closet.
Which I love. One of my professors actually at school, she was one of the producers of 13 going on 30.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to Donna Roth. She is literally like in real life, Jenna Rink. That's her personality.
That's
so
awesome.
Love her. One of my favorite professors. But yeah, that whole closet thing really reminded me of 13 going on 30.
Yes.
So the movie kind of does this thing where Natalie, after having this conversation with Whitney, Whitney's like, okay, you need to like be more open to love. And at the office, she also kind of has this guy who is clearly interested in her, but Natalie doesn't really realize what's going on. That guy is Adam Devine's character. And he invites her out to go karaokeing with him, but then she's like, no, or like she just doesn't like see what he's trying to do here.
Yeah.
So then later that day, she's on the way home, gets in the subway, and she sees like a guy that she thinks is like kind of trying to flirt with her. So taking Whitney's advice, she's like, okay, I'm gonna try and be more open. And the minute she leaves the subway, they both get out of the car, she gets mugged, and she's like fighting for her purse, and then she like bangs her head on this pole, and that's when we shift from reality world to rom-com world. So this closet scene is kind of one of the early scenes where you see her kind of slowly realizing, like, okay, I am in a different alternate universe. And I loved how in the movie you can automatically see a shift in the cinematography, mm-hmm. because like everything is like more vibrant and bright. And I think Rebel Wilson's character says several times, like, oh, it doesn't smell anymore.
Yep, she's like, it smells like lavender. What is that? And she starts sneezing because she's allergic to flowers. Two things about that kind of transition is, one,
yeah,
the mugging scene, it is so nice to see her fight back.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, I've got 3 kids to feed.
You look like you've known struggle. Can you help me out, please?
Ha ha, sucker, I don't even have any kids.
The other thing I read on IMDb trivia was that the director actually used a lot of grays and gray filters for the real world compared to the bright colors in the rom-com world.
Nice. You can really see the contrast between the two, for sure.
Absolutely. Kind of after the new apartment scene, I wanted to kind of touch on where she learns that her life currently is PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
She steps out into, it's kind of like a park where people are just, you know, milling around doing whatever, and she goes to drop an f-bomb and a truck beeps.
Mm.
I think I'm trapped in a my life has become a come on, what did I do to deserve this? My life's become a romantic comedy.
And then all of a sudden the people behind her step into a tango flash mob, and it's just, it is absolutely hilarious.
Yes, that was a funny gag that they kind of maintain, but the first time when she realizes that she's in the PG-13 movie, that was funny.
Yes, and I actually learned from Stefan that PG-13 movies can only drop one F-bomb.
Right.
And they use it very well in this movie.
Yes. What's your second scene?
My second scene is more towards the middle of the movie, the bedroom scene after Liam Hemsworth, Blake, takes Natalie out on a date. And we talked about her connection to Pretty Woman. And what's funny is when she wants to leave the hospital, they said her clothes were ruined, but they had some for her, and she steps out. And it's the same outfit Julia Roberts was wearing after shopping on Rodeo Drive. The white dress, the black hat, the gloves, the black envelope purse.
Right.
And I noticed that right away. I'm like, oh my word, that's great. But then when she goes on this date with Blake, she's in the long off-shoulder red dress that Julia Roberts was in Pretty Woman. And so they have a very nice meal, and they actually break into an ice cream parlor for dessert. I'm just sitting there like, okay, where are the cops? And of course, a few minutes later, you hear sirens.
Right.
They don't get arrested. They leave. And then they go to spend the night together, but because it's PG-13, they can't show anything besides kissing, really.
Yes.
And so the morning after, she wakes up in her beautiful, gorgeous apartment, and Blake comes in with a towel wrapped around his waist of his gorgeous body, because he is Liam Hemsworth of the Hemsworth fame.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, wait a minute, I don't think we actually did anything.
Good morning, beautiful.
Last night was amazing. You know, I was just thinking in the shower, when I look at the world through your eyes, it's like I'm seeing it for the first time. Natalie, I love...
Wait. Hold that thought. Don't say another word. Just get back into bed. I don't think we actually did anything. It just cut to the next morning.
What?
Just get back here.
Okay.
And then she wakes up again, and he comes out of the bathroom again in a towel.
Never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight. I've never seen you shine so...
Good morning, beautiful.
Last night was amazing. You know, I was just thinking in the shower, when I look at the world through your eyes, it's like I'm seeing it for the first time. Natalie, I...
Never never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight. I've never...
It continues the movie, but I just think the fact that they had to, like, do it in, like, three cuts is just really funny.
I like the music cue, too. Like, how the song would always, like, cut.
Yes. That was really great.
I mean, I guess, speaking of music, though, that kind of goes into my third scene, though, because my third scene that I wanted to talk about was the karaoke scene. So, Josh, who is Adam Devine's character, he finds a love interest in this rom-com world, and it's Priyanka Chopra. Priyanka Chopra, Jonas's character. Her name is Isabella. They kind of, like, at one point invite everybody up to this party at the Hamptons, and at that party, they announce that they're getting married.
Tomorrow.
So it's the evening before Josh's wedding, and everyone goes out for karaoke. So when they were setting this up, I was like, oh my god, this is, like, clearly a my best friend's wedding moment that we're about to have.
Absolutely.
In that movie, Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz, they go out for karaoke, and Cameron Diaz's character is, like, terrified, and Julia Roberts sets her character up to look stupid and sing karaoke.
All right, folks, everybody, my bride-to-be here is about to kick some ass on...
No, it'll be fun.
No. Really? Michael, she doesn't want to, Michael. Leave her alone. Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the dazzling vocal stylings of Miss Kimberly Wallace.
So, in Isn't It Romantic, as I was watching this scene unfold, Isabella sets up for Natalie to sing.
Some people are just not meant for the spotlight. It's okay.
No, I can give it a go.
Really? Because I've never seen you sing before.
Do it.
You don't need to drink it. You can just...
I'm going to give it a shot.
Ooh, you're giving it a shot, aren't you?
Okay, go for it, Natalie.
This should be interesting.
And I was like, oh my god, okay. She's gonna sing Say a Little Prayer for You, which is really the main song in my best friend's wedding, and I'm gonna get a Dionne Warwick moment, and I'm gonna be like, yes, this is amazing. But oh no, we don't get Dionne, we get her cousin.
So I guess...
Clock strikes upon the hour and the sun begins to fade.
That's right, everyone. We get a full-on Whitney Houston reference because Rebel Wilson starts to sing I Want to Dance with Somebody, and it erupts into a full-on musical number.
But when the night falls, my loneliness calls.
Oh, I want to dance with somebody. Somebody, yeah, I wanna dance with somebody who loves me.
Literally, the only reason why I chose this scene is because I don't know if Stefan told you this, Jess, but I'm a huge Whitney Houston fan. The listeners know. I feel like there's a good percentage of these episodes where I will figure out a way to bring in Whitney Houston into the conversation. But in this case, I didn't have to work so hard because she literally, her song, her music pops up in the movie. So it's just like, oh, great. I don't have to do the work here. So that's really why I chose this scene. It was fun.
Yeah, Stefan did mention it 1 or 2 or 10 times.
Oh,
I made sure not to steal your scene.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. It was definitely a brilliant scene in the fact that they emulated my best friend's wedding with her, you know, not singing so well at the beginning, and then the music cutting out, but then all these little things around the bar are setting up, and then these, like, three women are just her backup singers all of a sudden, and she does a face plant during it. And at one point, these dancers have toilet paper stuck to their shoes. It's all just great and hilarious and so fantastic, and definitely one of the better musical numbers I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, I was really surprised with how elaborate it became. I was like, wow, they did it. Because that's what Whitney deserves. A nice musical number.
I mean, I get it. I'm a big karaoke fan. Stefan's a big karaoke fan. We've gone out to karaoke together. We've seen The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Definitely nothing up to that level. But Definitely some good singers out there, but it was definitely a really great scene.
Yes, warmed my heart. Well, Jess, I mean, what's your last scene that you wanted to talk about?
My last scene, like specific scene, is more towards the end. It's actually the morning after karaoke, and Rebel Wilson, or Natalie, wakes up to Blake on the phone with her blueprint out and saying,
"You're right, it is innovative. And I came up with it all by myself. I'll fill in the architects and they can work up the official plans and models. Okay? Goodbye."
And he gets off the phone and she said,
"Are you just pitching my idea and passing it off as your own?"
"No. Well, I saw them when I was in your apartment and the idea was for me, so whose idea is it really?"
"Mine."
"Whoa. Hey. Know where all this crazy assertiveness is coming from. Let's be honest, you weren't going to be able to pitch it to me now anyways."
"Yeah, I was. Why wouldn't I?"
"No, you weren't. Darling, now that you're with me, you're not going to be working anymore. My girl slumming it in the realm of the employed? Not on my watch."
"I like being an architect."
"Come on, don't be silly. We should also at some point talk about changing your name."
"You're really projecting. You think, what, we're going to get married?"
"Well, yes. And obviously we'll be changing your last name. But no, I'm talking about your first name, Natalie. I really don't think it's going to work in my circles. So I was thinking Georgina. What do you think? Georgina?"
"You are...
beguiling."
"Horrible. You're a horrible person."
"Okay. I think you're just tired, darling. Why don't you go back to bed?"
"Why don't you piss off?"
And so I was really glad that she stood up for herself and her work instead of like, "Oh, let's collaborate on this. Da, 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 da." Like, no, I worked hard on this. This is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then her gay best friend, Donnie, just randomly comes in as he does throughout the movie. At first, she said, "I'm going home," because she was packing. And I swear, in that suitcase is the dress from 13 Going on 30.
Oh.
From the Thriller number.
Oh, right. Like the one with the stripes.
Yeah. I swear she packed that first thing in the suitcase and then she put some other stuff over it.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but I could swear that's the same dress that we didn't see in the movie. I know, but maybe I'm crazy. Who knows?
We'll have to watch that back then.
Yeah, but she's talking to Donnie and Donnie was like,
"Who do you love, Natalie?"
"Josh. I've never had the chance to tell him that. I need to tell him that. Right now, I'm never gonna make it, but I have to try."
"Oh my God, of course! Why am I so dumb? It was always gonna come down to running to stop the wedding!"
"Well, then you run, girl. You run like a sexy 18-year-old in the coming-out novel who just realized that they're in love with their theater partner, Ryan. Get it!"
She heads out and does the big climax running to the wedding and winds up running in slow motion. And at one point she, you know, is trying to hold her chest because, you know, she is a larger person, which is one of the things that made me really happy about this movie is that a larger person was starring in it. But as a larger person, it is difficult to run without a sports bra. So she's running in slow motion and she's like trying to adjust her clothes while she's going and gets to the chapel. But it just, I really think that was really the best that she's like, "No, you hunky, cute actor, get away from me. You're bad. I'm going to go get my best friend, man." So, Yeah, I thought that was really great.
I feel like you're kind of setting us up here. It's kind of like a bonus little scene that we're talking about. But I feel like I kind of made it a point when we were doing rom-coms to try and get to talking about the end. The way that rom-coms end, it is part of the fabric of what makes a rom-com. Is she going to get the guy or isn't she? But basically, how Jess kind of set up the scene here, she's running to stop Josh from getting married. And she does the whole speech. But instead of fighting for Josh to choose her, she has this whole speech where she ends up like choosing to love herself.
"Josh, you should choose me. You should love me. Because I love.
Josh.
I love me. Holy crap. I love me. Oh my God, this whole time I thought I had to get somebody else to fall in love with me, but I had to love me.
What I find so interesting about Isn't It Romantic is in the rom-com world, she's trying to reject or subvert the rom-com trope. So instead of like getting the guy, she chooses herself. So that's what happens in rom-com fantasy world. But then once she's in reality world, the actual Isn't It Romantic movie itself, it kind of follows the rom-com tropes at the end of the day, because she does end up getting like the guy at the end,
which is so flipping cute. Oh my gosh, I did not see that part coming. Outside of the window of Rebel Wilson's workspace is Priyanka Chopra's character in a Pantene Pro V like huge building ad, and she's in a swimsuit, and that's what she sees out of her window. And then, you know, her next stop is Josh's desk, and she's like, you need to stop living in a fantasy world. You need to understand that you're never going to get with that swimsuit model. And he's like, wait a minute. And he sits her down in his chair, and he goes over to her chair, and we see that he can't see most of the ad out of her window. What he can see is her and her reflection in the window. So every time he's looking that way, he's looking at her, which, aw, swoon-worthy.
I was looking at you. I'm always looking at you.
Josh, you're such an idiot.
Did you like, though, that once they flipped back to real world, that Isn't It Romantic ended up following all of the tropes that they more or less were kind of like, not necessarily like making fun of, but that they were pointing out? Because that, I feel like for me, that's kind of like where my, not issue, but I kind of like have to think a little bit more in regards to the movie, because I feel like they spend 75% of the movie pointing out, oh, this, oh, that, this is what happens in rom-coms, but then the actual movie itself that's commentating on rom-coms ends up following those tropes themselves. So then in that way, sometimes I feel like this movie, it kind of like thinks it's like, I don't know, like smarter than it really is, or it also kind of ends up just being like, we're just gonna go through a list of typical things you would see during a rom-com, but hey, we're gonna follow those things too.
I think just being in an 18-hour coma and stuck in a PG-13 world really kind of opened her eyes to be a better version of herself. Because in the beginning of the movie, she tosses her hair up and is wearing black and gray to work and is very timid and doesn't want to pitch at the big meeting. And Whitney brings to her attention that she's friend zoning Josh. And she's like, no, Josh isn't into me like that, da da da, whatever. Living through this, I mean, ultimately, this is a rom-com movie.
Right.
It is what it is. It's not real life. But I figure after going through an experience like that, you're going to have a little bit of a new lease on life.
Mm.
And when she goes into the office the next time, she has taken a shower and she's put on some makeup and she's wearing brighter clothes. And she tells her coworkers who were treating her like poop, tells them to do their flipping jobs. I really love at the end that Whitney stops her and is like,
I just wanted to say I'm so proud of you. Upstairs was amazing.
Just to be clear, Josh does not complete me. I complete myself.
You know, good. Even though you were so cynical, it looks like you have the dream job, the guy that really likes you, the really cool best friend, me. It's like you are in one of those love stories that you hate so much.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I do love that line, because I think, especially when you consider the way that rom-coms were framed to her as a child, her mom made it seem like trying to get the things that your lead rom-com girl attains in a rom-com, for someone like Natalie, it's unattainable. But her kind of arc in the movie is she opens up and realizes that those things that she thought weren't attainable, she's actually had those things all along. So she just kind of like, yep, needed to be aware of that, which I guess in that way also is kind of like a rom-com trope. Thinking about like when Harry met Sally, they realize at the end of the movie that they've been at each other's side all this time.
Yep. But that's why they're movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to say before we move on to our other segments?
One of my favorite gags in the movie, it happens twice, and I just get the biggest kick out of it. The first time Natalie goes into her new apartment, there's some flowers on the kitchen island, and of course she's allergic, so she throws them out the window, and somebody hollers back,
"Thank you, these are lovely."
And then later on in the bedroom scene, the alarm clock goes off and she throws it out the window and somebody goes,
"Thank you so much. I've been looking for one of those."
Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorite things in the movie. I just think it's so silly and ridiculous, but so funny. Like, I personally wish more people would use manners and have manners. I use manners quite a bit in my daily life. And so to have somebody yell, "Oh, thank you, I've been looking for an alarm clock like this," or "Thank you for the flowers, these are lovely," I just think is really funny and really just great. Just something extra to add that not everybody would probably catch.
Right. Yes, human decency would be a nice thing to see more.
Yes, agreed.
I guess we could move on then to Popcorn and Pop Stars.
Yes, sounds great.
All right, so this is a segment where we talk about where the diva was at this point in her career when she made the movie and potentially why she did the movie. So, Rebel Wilson, what do you have?
I know that this is her first leading role, like not co-starring with anybody or anything like that, like in the Pitch Perfect movies. I spent the weekend kind of having a Rebel fest.
Okay.
And so I watched a few things that she's been in. I have all the Pitch Perfect movies.
What's your name?
Fat Amy.
You call yourself Fat Amy?
Yeah, so twig bitches let you don't do it behind my back.
I watched How to Be Single, which I really love.
I put myself out into the world and it completely rejected me.
Whoa! Okay, you haven't been single for that long.
Yeah.
You gotta go around the board. Pass go, collect 200.
I also watched Small Apartments, which was kind of an odd movie.
I'm in the middle of a 40-day cleanse. I'm ridding myself of all my herpes.
We did watch Bridesmaids.
You read my journal?
At first, I did not know that it was your diary. I thought it was a very sad handwritten book.
I watched the episode of Workaholics that she was on with Adam Devine. That was their first couple roles, I guess.
Cool costume.
Hey, you're the one wearing the costume. Society's costume.
Oh, man.
And so I did watch a handful of things that she was in, and this is her first starring role, and I think she did a really great job. She's definitely got a lot behind her. She's definitely got quite a beefy filmography here.
I can also add, too, that Isn't It Romantic was actually the first film that Rebel Wilson produced.
Yes.
She was able to cast two love interests for herself because she, you know, she got that producer credit. And that's actually how she was able to get Adam Devine in the movie very easily, because they both were previously in the Pitch Perfect trilogy together and they were each other's like love interests in those movies. So yeah, all she needed to do was just like give him a call and he said, yeah.
Yep.
Were you able to find any particular reason as to why she did the movie?
Not particularly. I read that she didn't like rom-coms, but in doing research for the movie, she grew to love them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone that, like, I used to hate romantic comedies because I was like, like, so stupid. Like, yeah, of course Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts is going to end up with the guy.
Yeah.
And then for the movie, I had to watch like 65 romantic comedies in a row as research.
Oh my God.
And then I just start crying. I'm like, oh my God, these are the best movies ever. I really got into it.
And I know that both she and the director really liked the message of loving yourself and having everything together for yourself and not having a man or a partner or one specific thing to complete you was really a big deal for the both of them.
Right. Yeah, totally. And she also said in various interviews, too, that she was proud of being part of this movie because aside from being a producer, she's a plus-size woman that gets to be the lead of a rom-com.
It's interesting. So the average American woman is a size 16 to 18,
yeah,
which is my exact size.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also really the exact height of the average American woman.
Oh.
And 70% of women are considered plus size in America,
yes.
So which is the huge majority, and yet in films, less than 1% star a plus size female lead.
Yeah.
And particularly when it comes to romantic roles, there's not a lot of representation. So, yeah, so I'm really proud that I get to star in the film, and this is the first movie I've produced as well. So,
oh.
Yeah, so I'm proud of the message that it's...
Congrats. Congrats.
Which actually is a nice little setup here for Spill the Technicolor Tea.
Who is it?
Mrs. Potts, dear.
I thought you might like a spot of tea.
So Spill the Technicolor Tea is a segment where we talk about any gossip, controversy, or on-set fun facts that we were able to find in the movie.
It's like nice to have a little tea party every once in a while.
So do you want to get into Spill the Technicolor Tea?
I don't have any specific gossip or drama about the movie, except, you know, the fact that it was Liam Hemsworth's first musical, and so he was actually kind of ribbed and made fun of by cast members because they've all done singing and dancing numbers, but he had not. So they were kind of making fun of him for how simple his dance moves were. I think it was pretty funny that at the end scene, the end big musical number, he's playing the saxophone, and I actually posed to Stefan if he borrowed it from his brother, because his brother plays the hot man candy in the all-female Ghostbusters a few years ago, and at one point he's taken headshots and he's posing with a saxophone.
Oh.
And so I thought that was pretty funny and ridiculous.
Nice. It's a nice little Easter egg there, maybe.
Yeah. But one little thing that bugs me about Rebel Wilson is she's a plus size girl. She's been a plus size girl for as long as we have known her in pictures and on TV. And she actually joined with Torrid, which is a plus size clothing brand, a number of years ago, and put out a line with them. But now she has lost some weight and has put out a line of her own clothing, which goes size 14 to 24, which unfortunately is not all encompassing. There are larger people, there are smaller people, and I understand there are many stores for smaller people. There are not that many places for larger people.
Mm.
That's kind of my issue with Rebel Wilson. Otherwise, she seems like a lovely person.
Does she not associate herself with like the plus size label anymore, or do you think like she's trying to kind of leave that behind?
In the fashion world, size 12 is considered plus size.
Right.
And to go up to 24 is a nice range, but it's once you pass 24, it personally to me, and this is my opinion, it feels like she's saying, "Oh, you're too fat for my clothes."
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, you know, being in a plus size world and having plus size friends and friends of all sizes, I just tend to have an eye out on more things like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's really plugging her clothing line, but I'm like, Rebel, I know you had to have been around this size. So I guess I wish it were a broader range, but that's just me.
So kind of continuing where I left off, there actually was a controversy surrounding Isn't It Romantic when it first came out. When Rebel Wilson was going around doing the promotion for the movie, she appeared on different talk shows to talk about it. And when she went on Ellen, she said,
"I'm kind of proud to be the first ever plus size girl to be the star of the romantic comedy."
That's great.
And, well, this did not go over well on Twitter because people started to point out that there actually have been other plus-size women that were leads of romantic comedies.
Yes.
Namely pointing out Queen Latifah and Monique. Queen Latifah was in Last Holiday in 2006 with LL Cool J. Monique was in a movie called Fat Girls in 2006, and her lead guy there was Jimmy Jean-Louis. And then with Queen Latifah again in 2010, she was in a rom-com called Just Right with Common. So people were tweeting at Rebel Wilson, like, actually, you know, you're not the first. And Rebel Wilson responded to one of the tweets by tweeting out, "Hey girl, yeah, of course I know of these movies, but I was questionable as to whether, one, technically those actresses were plus size when filming those movies, and two, if technically those films are categorized slash billed as a studio rom-com with the sole lead, so there's a slight gray area." And Monique responded to this tweet by saying, quote, "Hey, my sweet sister, let's please not allow this business to erase our talent with giving gray areas and technicalities. Take a moment and know the history. Don't be a part of erasing it. I wish you the best." To which then Rebel Wilson responded to Monique and said, "Hi, Monique. It was never my intention to erase anyone else's achievements, and I adore you and Queen Latifah so much. I support all plus-size ladies and everything positive we are doing together." But unfortunately, by this point, Rebel Wilson had really dug herself deep in the hole here, and the movie, even before it really officially came out, started to receive a lot of backlash for what she claimed on Ellen. And reportedly, allegedly, Rebel Wilson was blocking a lot of people that were calling her out on Twitter.
Wow.
And those people started to trend hashtag Rebel Wilson blocked me on Twitter. And then over, you know, the course of a couple of days, Rebel then formally apologized by issuing a formal statement. And she said, "I neglected to show the proper respect to those who climbed this mountain before me, like Monique, Queen Latifah, Melissa McCarthy, Ricky Lake, and likely many others." So that was the controversy around Isn't It Romantic at the time. And I do wonder if some of this backlash kind of affected the box office.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. Definitely not being, you know, open to hearing what others were saying or doing a little fact checking beforehand. But to even question if those actors were plus sized, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was a really interesting claim that she made. Like, I'm not sure if they were plus size at the time. I mean, like, I don't think that has ever been an issue or question when it came to Queen Latifah and Monique.
Yeah, they have always been curvy, gorgeous women.
Yeah.
And I mean, their acting is on par and hilarious. And so to put it out there like that is really, you know, hitting the brick wall there, Rebel.
If what is claimed is true, that she started blocking all of those people that were trying to, you know, inform her, that's not a good look.
Yeah, no, not at all. I can understand being overwhelmed. And if that's the case, you know, take a few days from social media. But to block people is really not good light.
Yeah, she should have just like taken a couple of days off of internet if it got too overwhelming for her, and then like issued a formal apology, like, you know, what she eventually did. But the blocking, yeesh.
On a different note, we also talk about fun facts about the movie in Spill the Technicolor Tea. And this is actually one of the few films that Liam Hemsworth has used a comedic version of his Australian accent.
Okay.
It was actually pretty nice. And I actually took notice that he uses his American accent in the real world segments of the movie, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Right.
I just thought it was pretty funny that with Rebel Wilson, who is also Australian, who uses her Australian accent all the time,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't. And so hearing his Australian accent really played up was really fun.
Yeah, it's interesting that Rebel doesn't really switch off her accent. I feel like in a way the Australian accent is kind of like part of her persona. That's part of the package deal if you're gonna get Rebel Wilson to be part of your movie. And then I also felt like Liam Hemsworth really flipping on and exaggerating that Australian accent, I kind of felt like in a way that was like a little homage to all those rom-com movies where a girl falls in love with like a guy that has an accent.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like there's a good chunk of rom-coms where they take place in Europe and then the girl's like, "Ooh, the accent." So it's like, oh, that's funny. But I mean, the last little piece of tea that I have is the very end of the movie. They end with a big musical number and they sing Express Yourself by Madonna. And in order to use the song Express Yourself, Madonna had to approve of the cast of singing prior to shooting, which I kind of love this fact because it's such a diva move.
Oh, it is.
So it's very on brand for this podcast. But yeah, apparently Rebel Wilson even did an ad lib in the song, and that specific ad lib did not get approved by Madonna.
Oh.
So that ad lib was cut out.
Okay.
You know what? Madonna had to personally approve our vocals. Oh. I don't know whether you guys knew.
No,
that.
I didn't know that.
You know, on the track before we filmed it.
What?
That was sent to Madonna that morning.
No.
And one of my ad-libs didn't make it. And she goes, you don't do that. And so we had to take that off.
Wait a second. Wait, Madonna has heard us sing?
Yes. Yeah. And approved it. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keyword is she approved it. Yeah.
That's actually the same musical number I was talking about that they were kind of joking with Liam Hemsworth, where his moves weren't as fancy as some of the other ones in the movie.
Yeah.
So what was interesting is that they only had like a 4-hour time span to learn the moves of this dance.
Mm.
I thought it came out really well. But I also felt it was pretty tacked on. And actually, while I was reading through trivia on IMDb, I found out that due to the overwhelming positive feedback the film received, the director decided to create an elaborate song and dance number featuring the main cast for the film's ending.
Mm.
So it wasn't actually part of the original movie in the first place.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's pretty much really the only downfall that I saw in the movie, is it did feel kind of tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the only part where the first couple times I watched the movie, it was like, meh, didn't really like it. But, you know, it's a nice little ending.
It's like nice to have a little tea party every once in a while.
Well, I mean, I guess we could now move on to Tinseltown Showdown. So this is a segment where we talk about any potential people who may have been up for the role at one point or another, and then they decided to opt out. So were you able to find anyone for this? Because I was not able to find anybody for this segment.
I read that Rebel Wilson wanted Adam Devine, Liam Hemsworth, and Priyanka Chopra specifically for these roles.
Oh, nice. And then she got it.
Yep, she got her first choices.
Nice. Well, I guess then we will move on to our next segment. Show me the receipts.
No way. I want to see the receipts.
This is a segment where we talk about stats for the movie. So what receipts do you have?
I don't have none. So please tell me, Steffi.
Well, box office, I saw here that this movie was made on a budget of $31 million and it received $48.8 million once everything was said and done, but it did not do so great on its opening weekend. It finished third during the opening weekend and then it fell to fifth during its second weekend, again, considering maybe like the backlash.
Yeah.
And a little controversy that was surrounding Rebel Wilson at the time. Maybe that had something to do with it. And kind of nicely segueing here into the Rotten Tomato score, this movie has a 70% on the tomato meter, but it has a 47% audience score,
huh.
Which it's interesting because I mean, I'm used to seeing the tomato score, if anything, being lower and then the audience score being super high. I think that's kind of like the thing with this movie. I don't know if like you maybe have to be specifically in a rom-com headspace, or maybe you have to be critically thinking about the rom-com genre and what do all of those tropes mean, and then it's like maybe it's like fun to point out, look at that trope, look at this, look at that, that's popping up here. Maybe that's potentially why critics enjoyed it more. But I feel like in general I can see why the audience score is a bit low here, because after watching the movie and because this movie positions itself as this is a movie that is commentating on the rom-com genre and we're going to be pointing out all these tropes and it's a satire and they're building up audience expectation of like, what do these rom-com tropes mean and are we going to subvert them, are we not? But then it ends up following all of those rom-com conventions in the end. Perhaps maybe that's why the audience score is little lower than the critics? I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not sure. It possibly was competing with bigger movies that same weekend, being at Valentine's weekend. I just know that the people I have shown this movie to have all enjoyed it, all thought it was funny. So I wonder if maybe people are hesitant to see it, or maybe it's just too over the top for some. Who knows?
Yeah, and you know, maybe I feel like rom-coms in general, maybe in the typical way that we see them, they're not as popular and as big as they were in the 90s and in the 2000s, but perhaps maybe the genre itself was kind of working against itself in that way, because how many people actually want to see a movie that is billed as like, this is a rom-com? I think I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how rom-coms are still obviously being made, but it's just like the way that they're being made is a bit different, and they're not really typically billing themselves as like, this is a rom-com, in the way that like all of those classic rom-coms from like the 90s and into the mid 2000s were. So maybe that has something to do with it as well. I don't know,
maybe.
Yeah. So let's move on to impact and closing thoughts. What do you think is the impact of Isn't It Romantic? Is there an impact?
You know, I really appreciate that it's not your typical, oh, we fall in love and sail into the moonlight together, that A, has a plus size leading lady, though it's not the first.
Yes.
B, that it's making fun of itself. Like, she goes through and talks about all the things wrong with rom-coms.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes into a parody of a rom-com for the final thing to be, you're already whole and you can be happy even without a partner, is definitely a really great message to put out there.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty much what I have as well. Rebel Wilson, again, part of a line of plus size women that have been the lead of rom-coms. She is not the first. The movie itself was like an interesting like meta satire critique on the rom-com genre, even though towards the end it kind of ends up following those patterns. But it's an interesting one that's part of like the romantic comedy list of movies that we have now. So
yeah, looking at, you know, the diva's career, as I said before, she's had a lot of smaller parts, and this is the third time she has fourth time she has paired up with Adam Devine.
Mm-hmm.
Between that episode of Workaholics, Pitch Perfect 1 and 2, and now Isn't It Romantic, she's doing well. She kind of needs to do her research, but she's doing well. From last year in 2019, she was in a number of good movies, or movies that I've heard are good or have mixed reviews, like Jojo Rabbit,
right,
and Cat. Actually, I wound up watching her most recent forte, which is called LOL, Last One Laughing Australia, which you can now catch on Netflix. I just put it on a couple weeks ago before I even knew I was going to be recording this with you.
Mm.
It's an interesting concept. It is quite funny. Definitely not one for the kiddos, but she I think produces it and hosts it. And it's where they get like 10 of Australia's comedians into a room for like 6 hours. And the last one to not laugh wins, I want to say like $10,000. Not certain of the monetary amount, but it was pretty funny.
Nice. Well, maybe people, if you're interested in seeing more of Rebel Wilson, you can check that out.
Coming soon to theaters.
All right, divas and divos, we have now come to coming attractions. I hope you guys have enjoyed the past 2 months worth of rom-com divas. Next week's movie is a nice bridge into our new theme, because September, new month, new theme. Oh my goodness, I can't believe we're already in September, but whoa, time flies during a global pandemic. But yeah, so next week's movie is a nice bridge because it's a romantic comedy, yet it fits in with a brand new theme for September. I'm just going to say right now, I'm so excited for the movies coming up in September. I really, really love the theme. It's going to be so much fun. So let's see if you guys can figure out what movie this clip is from.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived, and I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
I mean, is there anything else you want to say about Isn't It Romantic before I let you go?
I definitely suggest it as just a Friday night watch through. It's nothing too heavy. It's funny. If you go in with a closed mind, then you're not going to have a good time. Mm-hmm. But just take it with a grain of salt. It is a rom-com. It is a rom-com in a rom-com. So, I mean, it's just one of those Friday night movies. And while we're all stuck at home, you know, why not give it a shot?
Yeah, totally. And if you guys have been watching any of the movies that we've covered so far, this is a nice one to end on after talking and watching so many rom-coms over the past 2 months. So this would be a nice way to end that journey for you. Well, I mean, Jess, thank you so much again for joining me. Where can the people find you on social media?
Well, as I said, my performer page is on Facebook, Lyric LaRue. LyricLaroux. I have a movie group I'm doing under my muggle name, Jess Sylvester. Mm-hmm. And that's the Wine and Crime Cinephile group. And I'm redoing the rules on that. So we're restructuring that and going to be reopening it very soon.
Nice.
Otherwise, I am on Twitter as Night Owl Reader, NGHTOWLREADER.
Wonderful. So you guys, if you like Jess, you can check her out there. And if you want to check us out on social media, the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We're at divadailiespod. You can also email us divadailiespod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a nice little voicemail message. We're 714-729-3121. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Jess, thanks so much for joining me again this week.
Thanks for having me, Steffi.
And remember, divas,
so the thing is, a diva has to be good at what she does.